How many of you have ever read the combined Torah portion for this week, Tazria and Metzorah? Nope? Okay, well, you have a treat ahead of you. I'm going to read to you a little bit from Tazria, and you will be delighted at the beauty of the passage, I'm sure. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "When a person has on the skin of his body a swelling, a rash, or a discoloration, and it develops into a scaly affection on the skin of his body, it shall be reported to Aaron the priest, or to one of his sons, the priests. The priest shall examine the affection on the skin of his body. If hair in the affected patch has turned white, and the affection appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it is a leprous infection." By the way, the word leprous here, we don't really know what it means. They just translate it as leprous. It doesn't mean leprous. "When the priest sees it, he shall pronounce him unclean. But if it is a white discoloration of the skin of his body, which does not appear to be deeper than the skin, and the hair in it has not turned white, the priest shall isolate the affected person for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest shall examine him. And if the affection has remained unchanged in color and the disease has not spread on the skin, the priest shall isolate him for another 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest shall examine him again. If the affection has faded and has not spread on his skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is a rash. He shall wash his clothes and he shall be clean. But if the rash should spread on the skin after he has presented himself to the priest and been pronounced clean, he shall present himself again to the priest. And if the priest sees the rash has spread on the skin, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is sara'at." I'm sure you're enthralled. Allow me to continue. This is even better. "Men, pay particular attention. If a man loses the hair of his head and becomes bald, he is clean. If he loses the hair on the front part of his head and becomes bald at the forehead, he is clean. But if a white affection streaked with red appears on the bald part in the front or at the back of the head, it is a scaly eruption that is spreading over the bald part in the front or at the back of the head. The priest shall examine him. If the swollen affection on the bald part in the front or at the back of his head is white streaked with red, like the leprosy of body skin in appearance, the man has sara'at. He is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him unclean. He has the affection on his head. As for the person with a leprous infection, his clothes shall be rent," that means torn, right? "His head shall be left bare," other translations, disheveled, which means they don't really know, okay? "He shall cover his upper lip," God knows what that means, "and he shall call out, unclean, unclean. He shall be unclean as long as the disease is on him. Being unclean, he shall dwell apart." Okay? "His dwelling shall be outside the camp." I'm sure you all saw a funny thing happen on the way to the farm. And unclean, unclean. Consider the priest in this. I mean, this is the Torah portion that everybody dreads. Consider the notion of the priest in this. Oh, by the way, that's the best part. The part that I didn't read is about, never mind. You can read it yourselves. But consider the role of the priest. Priest is the embodiment of holiness. He's the man. He is holy. He is linked to the divine. God gave us holy times and holy places and holy people. In the biblical world until the end of the 7th century, If you were going to eat meat, do you know how you did it? You took it to a priest and sacrificed it. The priest sacrificed it and gave most of the meat back to you. But you had to go to the holy guy in order to be able to eat meat. He would slaughter it. The priest offered sacrifices to God. The priest connected God and the Jewish people. He was awesome. Absolutely awesome. So now comes this chapter in Leviticus. The sacrificer, remember, everybody had to offer sacrifices. The sacrificer now transforms into the doctor. The priest has another function. He's now the investigator of diseases. He's the county quarantiner. You have an infection in your skin. Go see the priest. It turns white and then streaked with white and red. Something is very definitely wrong. You call the priest. And what does the priest do? He will determine if you are horribly sick. It's within his power to quarantine you, to put you outside of the camp. You're going to have to tear your clothing. You're going to have to shave your head. You're going to have to walk around proclaiming, Tame, Tame, unclean, unclean. You have to move out of your house. You have to go to a special place and live outside the camp. Your family's not going with you, so you can live without family. You're not supposed to infect anyone, so what are they going to do? People are going to stay away from you. The priest basically controls your existence, whether you will be shamed, whether you'll be socialized, how your life will be from that moment on and forever. So consider your relationship with the priest. How do you see him and how does he see you? This is a person who's got real power over your life. You see him with awe, and I suspect not a little bit of resentment. Maybe both. Awe because he's connected to God. Resentment because he can intimately examine your body. He can look at any part of your skin, and then he determines your destiny. There's got to be both attraction and revulsion in this. You want him to do the right thing by you. You want to trust this person, but he holds your destiny in his hands. Deep within you, do you feel trust? This guy's a stranger. You try to imagine what his motives would be. You resent having to relinquish control over your own life, and you put that resentment on him. But you've basically got no choice. Both the disease and the arbiter of your fate have independent existences from yours. You feel alone and perhaps despair. But maybe you got a nice priest. What if he shows some regard for you? Instead of wielding his awesome power that controls your fate, this priest now shows himself through facial expressions, through sympathy, through talking to you kindly. He's your ally. Suppose he says his hands are tied as to what he can do, but he certainly hopes this is going to turn out okay for you. He must follow procedures. That's what the Torah demands of him, but he's in there pulling for you and he's going to do everything he possibly can. He voices sympathy for your anxiety. He tells you personally he'll do whatever he has in his power to do for your benefit. And you can see the truth of his statements and the concern on his face. Now you're not alone. Now you've got an ally. Now you've got a friend. And just like any friend, he's sympathetic, but this one happens to be powerful, and he's experienced, and he knows his way because he's been there before. And now you're not quite as concerned or frightened as you'd been. This awesome presence that was so threatening is now, in some sense, your protector. Maybe even your confidant. He's someone you can trust And regardless of your faith, because you're no more in control now than you were before, in a certain sense, you're no longer alone. There's someone who will walk this path with you. Now only faith controls your life, not some person who doesn't know or understand you. You're still not in control. But you know that whatever can be done will be done. And that will suffice to calm your anxiety because you're not alone in this difficult part of living. So now think about the priest. How does he think about himself and how does he think about you? He may demonstrate through action and words the idea that he's special. I mean, I don't know about you all, but I get treated special. Some people mistakenly believe that clergy are holy, and it's bizarre. But you do really get treated in a different way. Sometimes it's just plain silly, right? They'll say, huh, rain today. How come you didn't do a better job? Sometimes they really think that clergy are closer to God. People will ask me to pray for them rather than with them. And a clergyman can start to take himself just a little bit too seriously. You can begin to believe you're special, that you are holy, that holiness means that you're a cut above. You're intrinsically different from anyone else. And I'm sure that this notion affected the ancient priests, at least some of them. Somehow you're just a little bit different than the folks that surround you. And if you find yourself in a position maybe to lord it over somebody, well, you know what? You deserve that, right? Because you're just a little bit better. Or maybe due to noblesse oblige, you show concern. But you know, you're never going to be on their level. His pedestal, the priest's pedestal, is just too far above the normal person. And he can't relate to the person of the lowly estate. But if you think about that person, that priest, for a moment, what's he doing? He's isolating himself. If you're at the top of the tree, you're there by yourself. It's a great view, but you're alone. The man is isolating himself as much as he is isolating you. He does that because he does not realize the connection to another human being resolves the human problem of loneliness. When he removes himself, when in your presence, he mentally calls you stranger. When he considers that your existence is somehow intrinsically dissimilar to his own, because he is holy, then little by little he pushes his life aside from the world. This, by the way, explains some of what you've been reading in the papers over the last few weeks, but not commenting on that. You see, my friends, it is our frailty that brings us together as human beings. It is our frailty that helps to resolve a fundamental human problem. The philosopher Schopenhauer said that we're all like porcupines lying down for warmth. Can you picture porcupines lying together? They got a problem. They lie as close as they possibly can for warmth. If they get too close, ouch! So they get as close and as far away as they can at the same time. And that, Schopenhauer said, is the human condition. On identifying ourselves with others, we make the quills relax, and then we can get closer. So consider the person in the Bible with Tzaraat. This is the original pariah, okay? He had to walk around. Can you imagine walking around going, unclean, unclean? If anyone wanted to be near you, they don't when they hear that. Who would want to be his friend? He embodies loneliness, the way black maids in Jewish homes once embodied aloneness. Or today, when you see a homeless person standing by the side of the road with a sign that says, "We'll work for food," what do most of us do? They're the pariah. They're to be left. Certainly we don't speak to them. They are ghosts. Two-dimensional shadows of human beings, purposefully unseen because they make us uneasy. At least the maids got paid, even if we didn't know who they were, even if they were not allowed to be themselves in so many homes. You see, our lepers don't have to shout out, "Unclean, unclean." We, who are priests in there to them, treat them that way. We hold the keys to their humanity by recognizing them for their interior being, for who they really are. But too often, we say, "They're not like us. Something about these people that is unclean, and I don't want to be nearby." Maybe like our ancestors, the priests, we really cannot do anything for them, but recognize that they are human like us. So we can sit with them, we can listen to them, we can say something with regard to them that says, transmits the idea, "You do exist. I will recognize you. Even if you're standing on the street with your hand out, I will recognize that you're a human being. I will have a conversation with you. I will not be afraid of you. I will talk to you. I will recognize that you are very much a member of my human family." And what we would be saying is, maybe I can't cure you. Maybe I can't improve your lot in life. But I can engage you as I would engage my friend. And I am not holier than you are, because you are thou to me, as I am as a thou to you. I don't know how many of you remember this, but I can remember when there used to be a saying, "The Cabots only talk to the Lodges and the Lodges only talk to God." I don't think I made that up. I think I can remember it. I haven't heard anybody say it in decades, but what they meant was that there are people who are sufficiently high in the social ladder that they didn't have to talk to anybody. What those people did was isolate themselves. I think that for the same reason, we don't talk to people around us who are dissimilar to us, and the reason is fear. The priest was afraid of the leper. The priest had to examine the leper. He was different, he was lower, the priest might get a disease. He didn't want to be there any more than the leper did. But the priest has got this exalted position, and so he can't say, "Look, I'm afraid of you." So what is he going to do? He'll treat him with disdain. He didn't want to get exposed to illness. He just wanted to do his job and go home. I don't know how many of you read obituaries. How many of you read obituaries? Yeah. Okay, does everybody do the same thing? You read one that's your age and you go, "That's not me, because they look older than me. They had a disease I couldn't possibly get." No? Don't you hate it when you read somebody younger than you? Okay? Oh my God, that could happen to me. Do you go through a list of reasons and it's not you? That's the normal reaction. The person is different from me in some particular fashion. We distinguish ourselves from those who frighten us in one way or another. But what would happen if we assume that it's necessary to find common ground with every single person? So here's the point of the sermon. There exists within each and every one of us an existential loneliness. Every one of us wants to share a piece of ourselves with someone else. Everyone wants to tell his story, her story. Everyone wants somebody to hear them and to not say anything. Just listen until I'm done. I think that's why there are so many therapists. It's not because they can solve your problem. It's because they'll keep their mouths shut until you finish talking. When I was a kid and in Boy Scouts, The only blacks I ever saw were the maids in my friends' homes or the kitchen women at the elementary school or junior high school. So I'm walking down to the lake at Boy Scout camp, and oh my God, a black boy comes out of the woods walking towards the lake. I did not know what to do. What am I going to say to this kid? He's black. And I looked at him, and he said, "Excuse me, have you seen any colored boys around here?" That was the expression in 19. Well. And I said, "No." And I looked at his face, and he was afraid of me. And I was afraid of him. And he'd probably never spoken to a white boy before. And I know I had never spoken to a black boy before. And we were afraid of one another. And all he wanted to ask was, where did the rest of his patrol disappear to? What's this week's Torah portion about? It's about lepers. And we live among lepers. It's about us. It's about how we make the other into the stranger. It's about our loneliness. It's about their loneliness. It's about assuming that we're the priests who can examine somebody else and decide what's wrong with them and say, "You're a leper. Walk around proclaiming yourself unclean," and hoping that nobody does it to us. Rabbi Zalman Shachter Shalomi wrote about being at a Rosh Hashanah service. I think he was in England. The Chazan was about 80 years old. Rabbi Zalman Shachter Shalomi said it was terrible. Horrible voice. Could not understand why this guy was still singing the service. And the Chazan took the Torah during the Torah service, and he walked around with the Torah, and everyone kissed the Torah, but Rabbi could tell that they were trying to get close to the cantor. And they couldn't understand it. What was so holy about this cantor with the terrible voice who was like 80 years old? When the service was over, somebody told him how the man had survived the Holocaust and the people he had saved and the righteousness of his life. And Rabbi Shachter Shalomi had decided he would not come back for Yom Kippur because it was a terrible service. There was no spirituality at all. And the primary fault was this chazan. But having heard the story, he came back for Yom Kippur. And you know what? It was a very spiritual service. And the man's voice had improved distinctly. It wasn't the cantor that changed. It was the rabbi who saw the person in an entirely different way. In this Torah portion, perhaps we can imagine ourselves as the priest to each person. Consider your role. When we encounter someone, even someone we know, you're being asked into their life. Are you going to be the person who says, "Look, I don't know what your leprosy is, but I'm there with you. I will listen to your story. And if there's anything in my power that I can do to lessen your loneliness in this struggle, I'll be there." Or are we going to be the guy who says, "Listen, it's my job to get through this. And by the way, I'm as afraid of you as you are of me. And the quicker we can get this over, the better off we'll all be." We live with our existential loneliness, perpetuated by our fear. We live in a world of our own making. And perhaps this week we could say to somebody, "Just tell me your story. Just tell me your story. Let me sit and listen." There'll be one less leper in the world. Can you do that, sir?